listeners, it's me, Marnetta Larimer, host here at Impact in the Classroom. As always, we love to kick off our conversation by asking what's impacting the classroom. Today, all snapping fingers, we have with us Daryl Brown with ITAV, It Takes a Village Schools, and we will be chatting about servant leadership and holistic schooling. Daryl, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. It is so good to see you, Marnetta.
Same. We have some history, right?
Yes, we do. Teach Stone brought us together and it created a full circle moment for us as well. How I first met Marnetta was training to get my certification to be a 0-3 infant toddler class observer. So that's how we met. And now we're connected forever.
We are connected forever. I remember your name for the training was Daryl Donut, right?
Daryl Donut.
Because our icebreaker was about having a picnic and what you were going to bring, and it had to match the first letter of your name, right? And that's, I remember that. It's been many, many years, but you will always be Daryl Donut for me. I am so excited about our episode today, especially, you know, being able to chat with you. I think the first thing I want to talk about is what you do at ITAV Schools, and tell us a little bit about that organization.
Awesome. So again, everyone, my name is Daryl Brown, and currently I serve as the Director of Teaching, Learning, and Quality Practice with It Takes a Village Family of Schools. I just transitioned into that role, so that's overseeing the educational component over all of our 0-5 classrooms. It Takes a Village is comprised of 6 early child care centers and 2 elementary schools. And so I work over the ECE space. Prior to this position, I was the director of the Early Childhood Workforce Development Program. And that program was created to directly combat the teacher shortage crisis that all of us are all too familiar with. And so during that time, I had the pleasure of supporting 100 youth between the ages of 16 to 24, earn their Child Development Associate credential through the Council for Professional Recognition. And so that was such a pleasure working with new faces in our field and encouraging new people to try early childhood education. And yeah, so developing them professionally, as well as making sure they are aware of all best practices, quality teacher and child interaction. So yeah, that's what I do here at It Takes a Village. How I got to this position is previously I used to be a teacher coach for Early Head Start. And so I would train infant toddler teachers on best practices using the construct coaching tool, which I totally subscribe to, but it aligns with class directly and it allows teachers to focus and hone in on practices that allow them to get the scores they want in class.
Wonderful. And congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you.
impacting your community.
Yes.
So today's session is about some things that really resonate with you that you feel very strongly about, right? Servant leadership and holistic practices in the classroom, right? So let's talk first about servant leadership. And can you tell us what is the let's start with the definition of servant leadership. What does that mean?
Yes, servant leadership to me is being a support, a resource for the people that you serve. Most times, traditionally, people look at leadership on a hierarchical scale, and they're a dictator, they're at the top, and they're, you know, setting expectations, and they're requiring reports, and they're asking for specific things in this world of key performance indicators. But for me, and what I absolutely subscribe to is being a servant leader. I think servant leadership is the absolute way to go, and it's the way that I lead. I don't look at myself as at the top of the food chain and calling all the shots. I want to be of service to the people that report to me, making sure they have all the things they need, being a constant resource, having that open door policy so that you can build that trust and that relationship so that things get done. And in that type of environment where you support the people that work under you and you serve them, for a better word to align with this conversation, when you serve the people that report to you, they are more than likely more successful at getting the job done. So for leaders, being of service to the people that report to you, I think is the way to go. And it has been the reason I've been successful in the people that I've supported in my career.
Okay, I heard some specific characteristics in there, right? You were talking about like putting others first, focusing on service. I think I heard that. What are some other characteristics that really define servant leadership?
I think relationship building is so important when you're coaching and leading other people. And when I say relationship building, that's building trust in the workplace. Obviously, mm-hmm. you can't be friends with everyone that reports to you, but being able to build a relationship on trust, transparency, expectations, that allows for it to be a two-way street. Again, me being of service to, what do you need? For example, a teacher may be struggling to get lesson plans done. And if I wasn't a servant leader, I would be referring back to their key performance indicators. Well, you have to have your lesson plans done weekly or monthly, and you have to do this. A servant leader would start with, what is, you know, the barrier that's stopping you from getting your lesson plans done? That is actually an example in my past that I've experienced while working as a coach. And a teacher was really struggling to get lesson plans done. And so I asked, what's going on? And so the technology in that teacher's classroom was outdated. It wasn't able to keep up with the latest technology and updates with the system they use for their curriculum and to get lesson planning done. And so as the leader, I did everything in my power to make sure that teacher had everything they could. And so we were able to get that classroom new iPads, and immediately lesson planning started to be done again in that classroom. And so before that, the teacher was struggling to do anecdotal note taking and to do handwritten lesson plans and to individualize. And it was a lot. And so if we only look at it from a leadership perspective, I'm not able to check that box. I'm going in the classroom. I need to see a lesson plan. It needs to be visible, and I don't see it. But a servant leader found out what was going on, what's the barrier, and then immediately addressed that barrier so that the teacher could be successful. So to me, that's, I think, in a nutshell, a good example of the difference between servant leadership and traditional dictator leadership.
Yeah, that really empowers your teachers to, you know, figure out some effective like ways to move that needle in their classroom mm-hmm. and get the outcomes that they mm-hmm. want to get. You said so many other terms that really resonated with me, right? You asked this open-ended question, so you were inquiring about that you know where I'm going, right? You were mm-hmm. talking about really a lot of things that fall in that emotional support domain of the class tool, right? You're mm-hmm. aware that there's this challenge with the educator and you're responding in these ways that really support them and able for them to be successful in the classroom with some mm-hmm. sprinkles, of course, of some of the other domains as well. But those parallels with what we do here at TeachStone with our class tool and how you are supporting your educators, right? That's a very clear parallel process in those behaviors mm-hmm. based on the importance of the relationship building that you said was key to the servant leadership work.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy, right? You can use those class tools and domains in every aspect of life, right? If you look at work as a place where you grow and continue to learn, then that's a place you can always use the tools of class, right? Because you're trying to create an environment with class to have get the most out of learning in that environment. And so in that relationship between the teacher and their supervisor or director or someone that's supporting them, those tools absolutely can be used and be beneficial.
Absolutely. Not just for children, you know, and students in the classroom. Adults need that same type of care, inquiry into them as people and positioning them to improve their practices, right? So the sensitivity and care that you're showing, like, kudos. And thanks for using what you learned so long ago.
From you. I learned it from you.
You also had a really beautiful example of how those characteristics show up in your work. So I appreciate you sharing that with us as well. Why do you think that school and educational leaders need to think about leadership differently? Why is that important?
Well, we are suffering from a teacher shortage crisis. We're looking for teachers. Everyone is looking for teachers. If you have a full staff with floaters, kudos to you, you know, right? And we want that to be the norm. And for us to get there, this field needs to be led by servant leaders. And also make sure they fall in love with this field, right? We don't want them to come for 3 or 5 years. We want them to be career educators and realize the importance of building our future leaders and potentially future educators for the future. I used to refer to my apprentice in my workforce development program as future educators because I wanted them to feel empowered and to stand in the fact that and see themselves as educators. And so I feel absolutely needs that approach, that leadership, and things like that. It'll just overall benefit the classrooms and the centers if they have those types of servant leaders, and it'll overall ultimately benefit our field of early childhood education as servant leaders.
Most definitely. When Robert K. Greenleaf coined this phrase, right, back in the 70s, and it became this phenomenon, you know, he talked about servant leadership at an individual, right, leadership level, but also touched on how an organization as a whole could live as a servant leadership body. What are your thoughts about that and where you are currently or where you've been previously? Like, what does the embodiment of that look like at an organizational level, and how do you support that?
Yeah, thank you for that question, because I do think that relates to some of my experiences in this field. When you work for an organization that's top down, looking at leadership as servant leadership, they're a lot more intentional about the professional development and growth of their staff. They're a lot more intentional about being a leader in their community and not just servicing the kids when they come through the door from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., but serving the entire family holistically, being a staple in their community and feeling like they're of service and that what they provide is a need. And I think it's super important, and I think it relates wholeheartedly to that statement of servant leadership and why he probably coined the phrase, because if an organization looks at themselves as a servant organization or, you know, has servant leadership as one of their core values, then from the top down, from leadership to the little babies that they serve, or outwardly from the little babies to the families, children and families that that organization serves, everyone benefits from it, right? And is based in a trust, that relationship building piece will be automatically built into it. The community will trust this organization to know, hey, I can go here and my kid's going to get the education and care that they need, but also there'll be resources for me, for my family as a whole. I'm proud of the fact that I work for Intech the Village because we are intentional both ways by making sure we speak to the fact that we are serving not just the children here, but we're serving the children, families, and the community, you know, so that they can be transformative in their communities, this nation, and ultimately in the world as world citizens. So, yeah.
I love what you just said. And I knew you were going to get there at some point, right? That's another characteristic of that servant leadership, right? Creating that inclusive environment for the community mm-hmm. that's serving. And you were just talking about how, you know, you're meeting people where they are, giving them what they need, making sure that everyone has a voice. And so, yes, that obviously is just in your blood to lead in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Before we shift to our next topic, is there mm-hmm. anything else you'd like to share with us about servant leadership and either how individuals could adopt more of those practices or anything for the organizations who should do some shifting as well and those outcomes that come from that?
I would say servant leadership is the way. Subscribe to it. Get it on a t-shirt. Tattoo it if you're into that type of thing. It served me well. And for those who haven't looked at leadership that way, I'd encourage you to try it.
So now I have a follow-up question. What got you mm-hmm. into this? Was it just a natural inclination? But what led you into servant leadership? Did you read a book?
Oh, absolutely not. I would say it's authentically me. Since I was a young lad, I've been afforded the opportunity to be in leadership on the speech team when I was in high school, in show choir, on dance teams. I'm still dancing. I'm almost 40 and I'm a part of 3 dance companies here in Chicago. And I serve as the vice president of one of those dance organizations. I'm a leader in the ECE space. When I was a coach, I looked at myself as a leader. And so I think I was afforded those opportunities because of my ability to bring people together naturally. I think it's just a natural thing for me, and to get success from the people that I had the opportunity to lead. Oh, I should say, serve. yeah, so I think that's a part of me authentically, but I don't want people to think that that's not something they can't subscribe to or something that they can't do for themselves if they aren't that way naturally. And again, that's that relationship building piece, leaning into trust, being a servant of the people you work with, making sure they have all the things they need. It will be successful for you. For me, it is a part of who I am naturally. I'm a lover of people. I am a believer that you can find good in all situations. And so that may be authentically me, but I think servant leadership is something that anyone can do.
Yeah, most definitely. I agree. And I appreciate your honesty there, because there are some innate traits, mm-hmm. right? Have, right? So just mm-hmm. it's just who I am as a person, but there we always mm-hmm. have an ability to have a growth mindset, like, and shift the tide of what we're doing. So it is possible. There's literature out there, there are courses, etc. So mm-hmm. Definitely something you can shift into if your mm-hmm. leadership style is not that leans from leading from the heart as opposed to policy, right, and procedures. Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Let's move to this other part. Let's talk about holistic schooling. What are you talking mm-hmm. about?
So holistic schooling, right? I think that, again, talks about an organization that, and I hate to revert it back to servant leadership, but holistic schooling comes from that servant leader mindset, right? A holistic school, in my mind, is that space that you can go to for everything. My organization, It Takes a Village Family of Schools, one of our founders speaks all the time about how when she was younger, she would go to the watering hole, the Shule Watoto, or something in Swahili. And it was a program that she was a part of as a child that completely shifted her life, encouraged her to build this organization with her mom. And that program is an example of that holistic schooling, right? Being able to go to school, not just to educate your kids, but there's resources there for the kids. There's resources there for the family. There's community events. there's activism taking place. There's just this holistic thing, right? If a child is hungry when they come to school, maybe that family has some issues or some food insecurities. And maybe that child isn't the only one in that family that may be suffering and may be hungry, right? That holistic school will provide some type of family support or some type of counselor or someone that meets with the family and set goals and kind of gets acquainted with the family and then provide them resources so that they can come out of that situation. And so it's just this holistic approach with holistic schooling. In my mind, holistic schooling, I think, is the way education should go, being a staple in the community, serving not just the children, but the family and community as a whole. Yeah, some schools would need to expand, and then some schools kind of are already headed in that direction by the types of positions they have, family support specialists, counselors, mental health, wellness centers attached to certain schools. And so to me, that is that holistic approach. And I would just love to see schools being that centerpiece for communities.
Yeah. So not, I hear you saying not just addressing the immediate problem, but right, really get into the root of it and being a support system in alleviating or minimizing some of those barriers that come with having, for example, food insecurities in a household, because we understand the impact of those things on education and the students that we have right in the classroom. So I love the idea of not just, you know, this immediate thing in front of me, but really looking and diving deep at the root and trying to solve as a whole this problem, issue, barrier, challenge that might be in front of us.
And then, you know, sometimes that can get misconstrued, right? People may want to implement this like holistic approach at their school, right? And so they get a child that may be having a food insecurity, or you realize they're hungry when they arrive, and the school may feel like, okay, let's set them up or print out this piece of paper and, hey, they have a food bank in this part of town, and we just thought you should have it, right? Is that holistic, right? If they can't buy food, do you know about their transportation needs?
Right.
Are they going to be able to get to this food bank, right? And so if, you know, a more realistic, holistic approach will be having someone that can meet with families, you know, during orientation or registration for their child to attend that school, and then taking it a step further by setting goals and learning about that family's boundaries and then being able to address them there. And obviously, you know, resources or an organization's capacity would dictate how effective they can be in that holistic approach. But that would be the goal, right? That's the dream, that schools are the hub of resources. And we are not afraid as taxpayers to cheer for funds to go in that direction, right? Knowing that it's going to serve holistically the community. So yeah, just being really intentional about that and not just, hey, I noticed this and I want to support you. Here's a list of all the places that can help you. Good luck with that, right? The heart's in the right place. Their heart posture is in the right place. But is that the holistic approach we dream of, that we want ultimately for our schools? So yeah.
When you think about where we are like today, right, what you're talking about isn't what we traditionally think of when we think about school, right? It's, you know, children come, I have this role of educating them and then go on about your way, right? Why do you think that has changed?
Why our perspective of what school should be?
Yes.
I think my mindset has changed because I work in the field of education and people services and being of service of people. And I know the benefits of that. And I think people are starting to realize it's hard to have a one-stop shop somewhere. It's hard to build that, but it's needed. If we really want to be a lover of people and to see our communities grow, and we want to see equity across all platforms, I think that's a way that the less fortunate are seeing it could potentially be possible, right? In my career, I've had the opportunity to work for programs that were in communities that were heavily resourced, and the median income was higher than maybe another organization that I've worked for and the demographic of people they serve. And so when you can see both sides of the spectrum like that, you see this place has all of these resources, and this place over here doesn't have that. And so you start to think of ways of how you can replicate that and be of a resource. And so with schools, you know, education being like the pinnacle, it seems like that culminating place where people can go to and get those things. And I do think it's based in equity and inclusion and making sure everyone has what they need. So, yeah, I think it's just shifting with the time.
Most definitely. I think our early Head Start and Head Start programs, you know, have a good grasp of that holistic approach, right? And when we talk about like replication, how do we move that outside of that space? Because we know it doesn't stop there, right? Mm-hmm. Those families, those children, like they still have those needs moving into the public school sector. And again, we know the impact it has on their education. If a child, you think about Maslow, right? That hierarchy of need. If, you know, if they're hungry, I can't focus on nothing else but the fact, you know, that I am hungry. So how do we remove those things so that the learning can happen and we can look at those outcomes that we know will make them successful adults forward. So I like the ideal of that replication. Are there other places aside from early Head Start and like Head Start where people could go to replicate this type of holistic approach?
I don't want to pretend to be an expert in that area. I can just speak to my own personal experiences. So I want to make that clear. So I'm a dreamer, right? Marnetta, I'm dreaming, right? And so, you know, I come from a low income family. I come from living in low income neighborhoods, and I've been able to afford myself a career where I've been able to live in communities and work with communities outside of where I actually come from. And so that's where that dream is coming from for me. And I really try to stay away from being political, but I want to just speak to being an American citizen. And I think people need to really be aware of how important voting is and being aware of the change that we can make if we unite, right? And so my dream is that communities are so tight-knit that they can set goals together and be able to effectively go after it with numbers, right? For the service and for the embetterment of everyone in that community. And so a lot of times I see in communities that are heavily resourced and maybe, you know, above the poverty line, when it comes to income, they kind of do that. You know, they have community, they have town hall meetings, they discuss what's important to them, and then they all kind of do that. In my experience in the neighborhoods that I grew up in that did not have a lot of resources, community felt like the people on my block, right? If I was hungry, we can go to our neighbors and get milk. Or we can, you know, and that's your community. It feels smaller, right? And when you're hungry, you're trying to survive and you have to care and you retreat to doing what's best for you so you can just make it, right? And so that we get out of that mindset, again, dreaming, if a school was to be in that neighborhood and be the catalyst for that change and bring people together by being a servant institution in that neighborhood and then ultimately create and being that holistic hub for a neighborhood and slowly transforming that and creating jobs in that neighborhood and, you know, making education the pinnacle of all of that would be amazing. And that's me dreaming. That's me dreaming, right?
Yeah, I love dreams. I don't like to be political either. You're correct. Like, we don't want to just vote in general election, right? The big ones. It's also mm-hmm. there's so many policies and bills that affect early childhood education that are not just in general election. It's also in the people you promote to higher offices that are going to, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, there's so many things that slip through when we're not paying attention. And so voting mm-hmm. and being aware of what's happening in our early childhood landscape is important to make sure that we mm-hmm. ensure we get the things that we need, the funding, right? The support mm-hmm. for our educators, you know, and supporting their salaries, retaining our workforce, like all of those things mm-hmm. are important for us to do this work that we all love so much.
Yeah.
So while you're dreaming, how do you see, or like, where do you see schooling evolving?
Yeah, I think it's just that. I think schooling should evolve in the way that schools are not as traditional, like this K through high school and then college, you know, thing, early childhood education, grammar, middle, high school, then college and then graduate type of thing. And it's just about school. But again, I do see it changing in that holistic approach. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to work with the organization like It Takes a Village Family of Schools, because that is what our CEO, Nikisha Hobbs, and our CGO, Anita Andrews Hutchinson, they're both co-owners and actively working in leadership here still, which is a blessing. But that is the direction we're going for, is that change in that educational space, being culturally responsive to the children and families that we serve, and, you know, being able to provide wellness opportunities to the community as well as education, being able to provide career pathways to families and resources, education opportunities for not just the children we serve, but for the community in general. And so our workforce development program was an example of that, right? It directly came due to a need from our community, right? We have children we need to serve and we don't have enough teachers. Well, we need to go out and get more teachers, and we need to train them, and we need to have patience, and we need to fight for funding to do this type of work and go out and get it. And so I think that is the direction that I see educational spaces going to, being culturally responsive, making sure that all children, no matter their creed, skin tone, they feel seen and represented and empowered, and that not just the kid is getting this knowledge and growing, but there's education opportunities for the family as a whole and then as a community as a whole. And so if I see education going that way in certain spaces, I would say in Chicago, we have recently in our public school system, we're adapting this school board, elected school board officials type of thing. And it's causing an uproar in Chicago. I won't speak too much about it because I'm not a expert in that, but I would hope that the result of these things is more holistic schooling efforts for neighborhoods, making sure funds are distributed equally and ultimately so that schools can be like this example of servant leadership, top down, a servant organization to the community, and ultimately becoming that holistic schooling approach, and being like that pinnacle of neighborhoods. That's my dream.
When we think about like the holistic approach and then that more traditional model of schools, how are we placing unfair expectations on educators?
So I think, and that kind of circles us back to being servant leaders, right? If we have a classroom that's over ratio, a teacher has too many teachers in the classroom, we can't expect that teacher to also do family assessments and also write grants and also, you know, do all of these things. And so we need to pour funding into our educational system so that, you know, we can have people in to do those jobs specifically. And so if we don't, right, and we aim high, we could place unrealistic expectations on teachers and ultimately cause them to leave the field. We do not want that. We do not want that at all. And so we want to make sure that we are not placing those unfair expectations on teachers. And the way that we do that is making sure they are absolutely equipped with all the things that they need, making sure that those who are leaders of that organization are servant leaders in ways that they are serving the teachers, in the ways that they continue to pour into the field of education by workforce development and making sure we have enough teachers in classrooms, and then ultimately seeking funding that can allow us to expand the services that schools provide so that teachers aren't called on to do everything. I used to be a teacher, and I was a pre-K teacher. And that's a lot. You know, you're not just teaching ABCs and 1-2-3s. You're a counselor. You're a problem solver. You're a teacher. You're, you know, a friend if it's, you know, the community is really that tight knit. So going for holistic, like I said, holistic, that holistic schooling model is the dream, right? But as we reach for our dream, we have to be very intentional not to overwhelm our teachers, our change makers. They are building our future of tomorrow, And so we want to make sure we are loving on them the most, just like we love on our kids the most. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really, I mean, I was going to ask a follow-up question about retention, but you kind of wrapped it up in that last response. How can we retain and support, you know, these important, pivotal people for what we need to do in our field? So I appreciate that. That was a nice whole answer. Yeah. Like, right where I needed you to go.
So. Yeah. And I was going to say also, too, like, we definitely want to make sure we're supporting teachers in that way. One of my supervisors used to always say to me, you know, people don't quit their jobs. Most teachers love teaching, right? They quit their supervisors.
Yeah.
And so that's another reason why it's so, so important that, you know, we implement that servant leadership, especially in spaces where we are trying to retain our teachers. Please retain your teachers. If you're listening, do everything to service your teachers. Love on them. Make sure they have everything they need. The same way you would support a child, support that teacher. And obviously not the same way. I don't want you going rocking any of your teachers when they're stressed. Don't try to lift them up and hurt your back. And then you won't be able to show up for the kids. But, you know, be there and be of support and have that servant mindset and that look through that servant lens. How can you serve? I think servant leadership is definitely the way to combat our teacher shortage crisis that we're experiencing.
Most definitely. Because even in the most stretching environment, right? If I have good support, if my leader is giving me what I need and the support, like I can withstand anything if I feel supported, right? Like, so you hit the nail on the head with, we don't quit a job. Like, we ain't quitting the role. Like we quit in you. Like we're leaders.
Yeah.
And all the shenanigans that comes with that leadership, right?
So, yeah.
Get that. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Well, don't derail Insider. Sorry, guys. It has been a pleasure speaking with you, Marnetta. I'm looking forward to us connecting again and talking about all the things class and early childhood education. And yeah, be the change you want to see, people.
Okay. And thanks for talking with us, Darrell, about how to lead with our heart, right? As opposed to, you know, all those other external factors. Those relationships, those interactions are the most important thing that really drive the outcomes that we're trying to seek. All right, listeners, we hope you've enjoyed today's conversation, and we hope that you follow along for another great season. You can find today's episode and transcript on our website, teachstone.com/podcast. And we'd love to know what you think. So let us know by dropping us a like and a comment on Apple Podcasts or from whatever platform you are streaming from so that we can continue to make content that really speaks to you. You can also send us an email at podcast@teachstone.com. As always, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together. Talk to you soon.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.